says they do not rush in at it.
Rigu Felix gave a snort of derision. Casting aside his single-bladed war axe, he threw off his battle helmet and cloak, oblivious to the wind and rain.
Ah, I have raised cowards for sons. Step aside, you weaklings. I can snap that thing's neck like a twig.
As his two sons gave way, the big wildcat bounded in, tail waving, ears flattened and fangs bared. He howled his challenge.
Arika!
The wildcat chieftain made a barbaric sight, but the hawk was a born warrior and not easily daunted. Shaking its wings free of the last net strands, it powered itself straight at the foe beast's face, avoiding the outstretched claws. The savage hooked talons struck true, deep into the area betwixt eyes and nostrils. Spreading its mighty wings, the big bird flapped a short distance into the air. Rigu Felis screeched in pain, hanging helpless for a brief moment. Then his weight sent him crashing to the ground as the hawk winged upward and out of the trees. Both the young cats and the pine marten dashed forward to help, but too late. The bird had flown. High into the raging gale it swooped, where it was flung by the elements into the maelstrom of keening wind and battering rain. Up and away it went like a dead leaf in an autumnal gale. Head over tail, talons over wings, a flurry of dark brown and white plumage, resembling a tattered quilt. Off, off over glade, swamp, stream, sward and loch, across dune and shoreline, out over the thunderous might of raging seas. The warlord, Rigu Felis, lay senseless on the wet earth. His sons looked on in horrified awe as Atunra inspected the gruesome injury inflicted by the bird. Quickly she held his head face down, wiping away the gore, as she issued hasty instructions to the young feral cats.
Jifra, Titru, run and get help. I'll try to keep him breathing while he's unconscious. Hurry now!
Jifra ventured a question.
Is he going to die? Has the big bird killed him?
The pine marten snapped back.
Nay, he will live as long as I can stop him choking on his own blood. Go now!
Petru leaned over Atunra's shoulder. The pine marten kicked out at him.
Don't tarry there gossiping. Go and get help. A healer, carriers, bandages and salves. Half of his face is gone, ripped off, most of the muzzle, all of the nose and his top lip. Right down to the teeth and gums. Go quickly. Stop for naught. Hasten before your father bleeds to death.
As they dashed off through the trees, Atunra stared down at the ravaged features of Rigu Felis.
Ye still have two eyes, though if ye see that face reflected in water, you'll wonder why I saved ye. Still, half a face is better than none. Now Rigu Felis will be able to slay his enemies with just a look, methinks.
Lysine still had her best seasons before her. She was rather young to be Mother Abbess of all Redwall. However, no beast could deny that the pretty slender mouse possessed wisdom, judgment, and the good sense of most creatures twice her age. On the west parapet of the abbey's outer wall top, Lysine and her constant companion, Burby the Mole Mum, basked in the welcome morning sun, sitting on their portable chairs, enjoying mugs of hot mint and comfrey tea. Burby scratched her velvety head with a huge digging claw, exclaiming in curious mole dialect,
"Her, ma'am, he wouldn't think this morn what a terrible stormin' it were last night. Burr, nay, he wouldn't."
Lysine, surveying the gentle blue sky, blinked in the warm sunlight.
"Thank goodness Mother Nature is in a calmer mood today. Just listen to that log. What a beautiful song she's singing. Can you hear it?"
The Mole Mum had to listen a while before she could discern the sound. She nodded, smiling.
"Her, aye, ma'am. 'Tis exceedingly nice."
Lysine began singing a song from her dibbin days, which harmonised perfectly with the bird's trilling.
When the new day is dawn.
where the soft fields of cloud like white billows do lie. She would sing of the earth far below that she'd seen, all perched in a quilt work of brown, gold, and green, as she wings on the zephyrs of smooth morning breeze to rise from the meadows, the hills, or the trees. With the evening come down, little birds cease thy flight, till the blue peaceful morning awakes from the night.
The Lark Song and Lycian's Ditty reached their finale together. Moll Mumberby, a sentimental beast, wiped a tear from her eye.
There now, ye little bird bees, high and far away.
Turning to face the abbey, Lycian allowed her gaze to wander over the magnificent structure, lovingly built, but firmly fashioned as a mountain. The ancient sandstone walls raged in hue from dusty pink to soft terracotta in the alternating sunlight and shadow, from bell tower to high-slated rooftop, down to the mighty buttresses, twixt tiny attic and mullioned dormitory windows, and below, ornate columns and ledges, and the long stained-glass panels of Great Hall on the ground floor. Redwall Abbey stood, solid and steadfast against countless seasons and the severity of all weathers. Lycian sipped her tea approvingly, nodding toward the front steps and main oaken door.
No storm could bother our home, eh, Burby?
Frowning, the mole mum squinted over the rim of her mug at the abbey grounds.
Her, that's as may be, young ma'am. But look at the orchard. Trees blowed this away and that, fruits and berries being knocked off any boughs. Gird pesky storm gale.
Lycian patted her friend's paw, smiling.
Oh, come on, old Grumblechops. That's what usually happens in bad weather. Nothing our red wallers can't put to rights. Drink up now. Here comes our refill.
Besides being a formal, which is a lofty position among his fellow creatures, Grud Long Tunnel was also the head abbey gardener, a nephew of Moll Mumberby. He was good-natured, cheerful and honest as the day is long. Balancing a tray on one powerful paw, he clambered up the steps to the wall-top, tugging his snout respectfully to the abbess and his aunt.
Good morning to ye, marms, and a right purty one it bees, too. I bring the hot scones and hextra tea. Boy, Oaky, you certainly can sup some tea in the course of a day. My old tongue would float away if I drink that much tea.
Burby chuckled.
Gird, impudent young lump, listen thy cheek and pour us in some of that brew.
Grud placed a plate of fresh scones, spread with madder cream and clover honey between them. Whipping the cosy from a sizeable teapot, he topped up both their mugs.
Should see what he storm a dude to my vegetables. Flattened the lettuces, snapped off in celery, and strewed tomatoes every which way. Even rooted up my young radishes. Brrr.
Lycian blew on her tea to cool it.
Your Aunt Burby was just remarking on the storm damage in the orchard. Is it very bad, Grud?
The formal's face creased deeply in a reassuring smile.
Don't ye fret, Habers, marm. I gotten my mull crew a-working down there, and all ye red wallers lending a paw. Just bees two more willing beasts a-needed.
Lycian shot him a look of mock severity.
We'll be down just as soon as we've finished tea, my good mole, and not a moment sooner. Carry on with your duties.
Grud caught the twinkle in her eyes. He bowed low, tugging his snout in a servile manner.
Very good, marm. As he says, marm, you take your own good time, marm. I look forward to a visit with pleasure. 'Twill be a great honor for us humble mole beasts.